Live from the College Football Hall of Fame, day one of Southeastern Conference Media Days is underway. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Rob Brown Show. This is the Fan Up State. I'm glad to have you. We are glad to have you because I am not alone. Well, I am alone here. I'm not alone in Atlanta, Georgia. There's obviously media members swarming around the College Football Hall of Fame, but here representing the station because I love you that much. Greenville, South Carolina, Spartanburg, South Carolina, surrounding metropolitan areas of the upstate of South Carolina. Back in the network, I'm calling it studio. He is in charge of this and every radio program that you ever liked and enjoyed. Ladies and gentlemen, the great one Lonzo is here with you as well. We're starting to fill in and fill up here, great. When we got down below me, inside of the hall, I guess we're going to call it the auditorium of sorts, which, by the way, I just realized when I said it's about half of a football field, it is, but it's a replica of the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl field, like down to the 50-yard line painting and an end zone with there's actual uprights over in the corner. And my question is going to be, How many media members throw fake touchdowns on that field today?
I mean,
under all of us.
How could you not? I just,
yeah.
You say fake touchdowns, there's probably a football floating around there somewhere, or there will be.
I got to think there is. And I got to think, even though there's like big, long rows of tables occupying the space down there, I got to think I can get 11 of us together to run a play, right? Like, I got to think, I mean, listen, it's the media. There's plenty of offensive linemen amongst us here in the media contingent. I think I'm calling the spot. I'm the Gronk. All right, I'm running the tight end dump. I think we're gonna line up Abe Gordon at the I think Abe's got to be a fullback. He's lost some LBs, but I think we can still line him up as the bruiser, as the fullback. I think we can put enough together. I'm not bringing the SEC Network guys in because, like, Roman Harper's down there, and I'm not trying to get hit coming out of the backfield. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to get planted by former Alabama Crimson Tide or turned New Orleans Saints player Roman Harper. I think Peter Burns is our quarterback. He's pretty enough, right? Like, he's a pretty boy, Peter Burns, who, by the way, Peter Burns is confirmed. We will have him tomorrow. Now, I do not know if it is going to be live or if he's going to come do a sit-down interview with us after the show, but SEC Network's Peter Burns is going to be swinging by, as will. I'm actually excited about this one, too. Great one. Benjamin Watson of the SEC Network, former tight end, played for my New Orleans Saints. Ben Watson, one of the all-around, all-time good dudes
in the
NFL.
You seen him? Does he still have tight end size?
He's a big SOB.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. If I recall, he was a large person.
Yeah, he's a big SOB. So Ben Watson and Peter Burns are confirmed, waiting on Dari Noka and waiting on Laura Rutledge, who I will hopefully get on the show this week as well. And then, of course, the rest of the interviews of players and coaches and whatnot, those are going to be coming throughout the course of the week. Once I get them confirmed, I will let you know. And again, coming up at 9 a.m., Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, is going to be giving his State of the Conference address a little bit later on in the show. So I'm looking forward to...
You know, Rob, I hope Dari's live because I have a clip to play for him if he's live.
Ooh, which one? Now I got to know. Aha! That is Dari Noka. I didn't even think about that. That'd be great. I will let you know. I hope he is live as well. But, again, live at SEC Media Days here at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia. We'll be here all 4 days. I see Greg McElroy walking down around there, too. Maybe I'll see
him. Yeah, I was going to ask you. It's now a decent hour for a lot of people.
Yeah,
so,
most of the
stars
talent
should be showing up, yeah.
Yeah, and once you make it to, like, Greg McElroy status, Peter Burns status, you just stay here in the hotel. Like, those guys just got to, like, wake up, shower, walk downstairs, and they were here. All right, I ain't made it to SEC Network status yet. I had to get my car and drive down the interstate a little bit this morning. I'm willing to do it for you, the people, as I am indeed a man of the people. But Those guys they just get to roll out of bed, put on their tailored suit and tie, walk down in a like come down an elevator, and they're at the job.
Well, I believe like everything will brighten there when Tebow enters the building. So you'll
Here's
know
the
when
thing,
he's
you
there.
Know, you bring that up. I got earlier this week. I got an email from the SEC Network that was basically like a talent interview request. Like, who do you want to interview? And Tim Tebow was not on it, so I don't actually know that Timmy Terrific's going to be here.
I know we talked about that he had a kid.
Yeah, just had a kid.
That doesn't mean he won't show up, though.
I don't know. Timmy T strikes me as the dude who is going to be, as he should, gentlemen, at the wife's beck and call for like a couple of months. Tim's going to be like, no, I'm not doing football. My wife just had a baby. Like, he strikes me as that guy.
Any offensive linemen show up yet? I mean, you should
not
be able
that
to,
I've seen.
I was going to say, you should be able to spot those guys from a distance.
Yeah, well, and from what I understand, the players, so when at the ACC Media Days, which we'll be live at next week in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the ACC Media Days, when the players show up, the first play they show up is at Radio Row, like that, or that's where they come first. With the SEC, I think they have like a secret underground tunnel they sneak everybody in, right? Like, I have not seen, and granted, it is 8 o'clock in the morning, and the first team, South Carolina, doesn't begin their tour and their speeches till a little bit closer to 10, so they may not even be here yet. I assume they're all staying at the hotel, but they may not be here yet. I have not seen any players yet. I've not seen any coaches yet, but I will say I've seen Greg Sankey so far. I've seen Chuck Dunlap, who is the SEC's communications director. Like, I've seen the authority figures, and as they are kind of walking around. So we'll see. We'll see. I did put in a request for Sankey. I'm going to keep it a buck. Probably not going to get Greg Sankey, because I assume every media person in the building wants to talk to them this morning. But again, we'll let you know who we get as we are slated to get them throughout the course of the week. Some of those interviews may be live on the air over the next 4 days. Some of those will be recorded off the air and played back for you the next day. So we will be kind of ringing those in and out for you as the week develops. Now, with all that being said, let's continue our 2025 Southeastern Conference season preview. I am giving you my picks, my prognostications, my projections for every team in the SEC, both ceiling and floor. What's the best they can do? What's the worst they can do? Here are the teams that we have run through so far. We started with the Alabama Crimson Tide. I do believe the Tide are good enough to get to 12-0. Obviously, there are a gazillion questions that have to be answered about quarterback. As I have pointed out, this might be the first year in a number of years that the starting QB1 for the Crimson Tide is not a nationally known name before we get to week one. So there are questions about the quarterback spot. There are questions about Kalen DeBoer. Is the pressure to be the guy who follows the GOAT just a little bit too much? The answer to me is no, but I also know that a lot, if not most of y'all, feel like the answer is yes. I got Alabama's best, their best case scenario being 12-0, their worst case being 8-4. I think the average of a 10-2 is most likely. For the Arkansas Razorbacks, they are 200-1 to win the conference, and I think my ceiling and my floor reflect that. I got their absolute best case scenario likely sitting at an 8-4, but I think this team could be as bad as a 3-9. The Auburn Tigers, 20-1 to win the SEC. I think the absolute best this team can do is 9-3. I realistically think this team could be as bad as 4-8. Seems like the fans are out on Hugh Freeze. Seems like there are a lot of questions about his ability. It feels like there are a lot of questions about talent on this team. And Auburn may have the most difficult schedule except for the Florida Gators. 22-1 to win the SEC. I think talent-wise, Florida's there. I got two questions. I'll say three questions. Question number one, is DJ Lagway him or not? We're going to find out, and I think we're going to find out very quickly. Why? Because inside the first 4 weeks of the season, the Florida Gators have roadies against the LSU Tigers and the Miami Hurricanes. And there's also questions about Billy Napier as the head coach. A lot of Florida fans not impressed with what they've seen so far. I think Florida can be a 10-2 team this year. I also think that they could be a 6-6 team. And if this team is 6-6 with the talent they've assembled, I think there will be a lot of questions about Billy Napier next year. We got to the Georgia Bulldogs, a 3-1 favorite to win the Southeastern Conference this year. I think this team has absolutely got 12-0 possibility. Realistically, I think 11-1. Whether it is Texas that takes them out, or whether it is a surprise game somewhere because of the dial-in, the focus on Texas that takes them out, I don't know. I think they will drop one. I think they could be 12-0. I think the absolute worst this team could end up being is 8-4. Kentucky Wildcats, I don't think they can do any better than bowl eligible. I think 6-6 is the roof. I think they could be as bad as 3-9. I said that there are three teams in the Southeastern Conference who I think have a coach on the hot seat this year. I think that Sam Pittman at Arkansas is one. I think that Hugh Freeze at Auburn is one. And I think that Mark Stoops at Kentucky is one, for a guy that just a couple of years ago felt like he had this team ready to take the leap to the next tier. A lot's gone wrong. This might be Mark Stoops' worst roster. As we mentioned earlier in the show, he lost his numero uno recruiter earlier in the offseason, and a lot of guys falling out the door. So that brings us now to the LSU Tigers at Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Where do we land with LSU? Well, let's start with the obvious here. We got questions about Brian Kelly and his family down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Is this a make or break, a do or die season for the head coach of the LSU Tigers? The answer to me is yes. The Tigers have enjoyed two unbeaten regular seasons since the year 2000. Brian Kelly has accomplished that feat three times. He did it once in Cincinnati, the others at Notre Dame. He's got no hardware to show for it. Could that change this season? No. I think the best case this team can be is probably 11-1. The schedule, another schedule that sets up with great difficulty for the LSU Tigers. Now, they do have Garrett Nussmeier. There's a lot of optimism about Garrett Nussmeier. All the conversation in the SEC has surrounded Arch Manning. That's fair. You got the genetics, you got the pedigree, and you've got the time for him to learn, to process, to develop, to get better. But Garrett Nussmeier is the other dude in that conversation. Garrett Nussmeier is being looked at as a top-tier quarterback, as a top-tier contender. Can he get there? Can he live up to those expectations? I don't know, but we're going to find out real quick. The worst case for LSU, I think the best case is 11-1. The worst case is I think this team could be 500. This team has gotten five straight losses in season openers. They'll try to snap it this year. Hey, Lonzo, top of your head. Where do the LSU Tigers open their season this year? Do you happen to recall? Because I do. That would be on the road. That would be in Death Valley. Not theirs. That one. They will be taking on the Cow and Meow offense, as labeled by the great Milonzo. That was a hearty moo.
The Cow gets extra. Because, you know.
Clearly.
Yeah.
They will be taking on the Clemson Tigers in week one, and it is on the road at Clemson, a team that has become a very trendy pick to win the national championship this year. They've got Cade Klubnik versus Garrett Nussmeier. Ladies and gentlemen, those are two of your top three Heisman Trophy odds getters right there. The third, obviously, being Arch Manning. That's a fight. If they drop that game, I don't know what's next for LSU. They've got a trip to Alabama. They've got a trip to Oklahoma. They are going to be crisscrossing the country in the SEC. They are going to be crisscrossing the country against playoff caliber football teams. It could get real ugly real quick for LSU. I'll put it this way. If Brian Kelly can end this year at 11-1, I think he ingrains himself in Baton Rouge. I think the fans would chill TF out. They got Clemson, Louisiana Tech, then it's back home for, or excuse me, Clemson, then three at the crib. La Tech, Florida, and Southeast Louisiana. Listen to the next handful of games. at Ole Miss, at home for South Carolina, at Vanderbilt, back home for A&M, at Alabama, back home for Arkansas, Western Kentucky. They ended up at Oklahoma. Realistically, I think 8-4, maybe a 9-3 for LSU. Is that good enough to chill people out in terms of Brian Kelly, in terms of his future in Baton Rouge? I don't know. But that's about the minimum he's going to be able to do. Anything worse than that, and I think this team can be in trouble. Give me a ceiling for LSU of 11-1. Give me a floor of 6-6. Give me a realistic outcome of 8-4. All right, when we come back, we'll knock out the next handful of teams. Mississippi State, Missouri, Oklahoma. We got Ole Miss, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt left to go. We're going to run through all of them in this hour of the show at 9 a.m. Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, will give his State of the Conference address. We will check in on that press conference, listen live. If Shane takes the stage before the end of the program, then we'll check in on that. If he does not, then we'll get some recordings. We'll play it back tomorrow. I'll let you know what interviews we get, when we're going to play him tomorrow. It's going to be busy, y'all. 4 days of college football chaos underway. I am Rob Brown, live from the College Football Hall of Fame here in Atlanta, Georgia, for the next 4 days as the Rob Brown Show, presented by our friends at Ingles Supermarkets, is live on the Fan Upstate. Thanks again to Ingles for presenting a live edition, not just today, but today, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday of the Rob Brown Show here at SEC Media Days at the College Football Hall of Fame in lovely Atlanta, Georgia. And great one. I did not think, and we're going to get back to college football here in just mere moments from now. I did not think that my first live face-to-face interaction with legendary Southeastern Conference broadcaster Paul Feinbaum would be standing at a pair of urinals, but that's what just happened during the break.
Did you side-eye, or you saw him when you walked in?
No, I was standing there doing my business, and, you know, there's like five stalls next, and I was standing at the one on the end because I was following the bro code rules, and as I did, a gentleman walked up and he stood as he was following the bro code rules. There was somebody on the other end. He picked the one in the middle. And I looked over and I said, that's got to be the most recognizable profile in all of college sports. And then I said, I don't know that standing next to the urinal is the right time to say hello to Paul Feinbaum, but I absolutely did. You should have went over and asked him to shake your hand. I thought about it, and then I thought it might be weird. Let me ask this gentleman, because here's a man whose opinion I value, a guy who has given me just oodles of life advice in this career industry. Jay Busby of YahooSports.com, who has a new book out called Iron in the Blood, which we're going to talk here in just a minute, because I've been yelling about the Iron Bowl for years, and I cannot wait to get my hands on a copy of this book and read it. Jay Busby, is the correct time to introduce yourself to legendary SEC broadcaster Paul Feinbaum for the very first time when you were standing side by side at a urinal doing the business? That's not, I mean, is that or is that not right to make a networking connection?
That's a rough spot, brother. That's a rough spot when you're in mid-business.
Mid-business. Yeah. Not like just getting started, not like wrapping it up and hitting the shakes. It's like,
That's rough. My only experience with that, the guitarist for the Scorpions, I saw him in Memphis at the Peabody Hotel. Now, I wasn't a huge Scorpions fan, but, you know, when you see, I think it was Michael Schenker, one of these guys here, and you're standing right next to a guy in a huge trench coat, and you know, there's not a whole lot else to talk about, but, you know, you're trying very hard not to make a Rocky Like a Hurricane joke. So, same thing with Feinbaum. You probably don't want to get too up close and personal at that point.
Yeah, I was going to say let it go in that moment. I was already letting it go, so I just didn't say anything. I felt like that was – Jay Busby, you,
by
the
way,
the
you probably shouldn't have sang let it go while you were standing at the urinal with Paul.
No, I probably shouldn't have done any of that.
Yeah, probably not.
How you doing, big dog?
I'm good, man. I'm good. This is fun. Just walk in, and then, boom, I'm on the air.
Yeah. I mean, sorry about that,
sorry,
but also
no,
you walked up, so it's kind of on
did.
You
yeah,
a little
it's
bit.
It's my fault. I asked for it. No. Happy to do it. Always for you, brother.
I want to start with not SEC college football. I wanted to start with a picture that you put up 3 days ago of the poster of Freddie Freeman, the famous Los Angeles Dodger, hanging on Truist Park. I need you to know you by posting it. It hurt a little.
Yeah. Oh, dude. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, I'm doing double duty this week. I'm literally like going from the SEC media days out to Truist Park to cover the All-Star game tonight. And yeah, it's rough seeing Freddie Freeman. You know, it's like seeing your ex on the arm of another dude, man. It's rough seeing Freddie Freeman. Not only that, having success and also the Braves just absolutely sucking this year. So it's just like the triple whammy there.
What's wrong? Because I hate being guy that automatically sprints to it's coach's problem. But I'm just, when I look at losing a hitting coach who goes to Seattle, and now not only is the Mariners, who have just not been, suddenly raking and have MLB's, I'm going to assume, probably home run king this year in Cal, best nickname ever, the big dumper, Raleigh. While I look in one of the most prolific offenses of the last 5 years in the Atlanta Braves, suddenly can't hit a baseball to save their butt cheeks. I'm running out of other things to say are the problem here.
I think that what we on the sidelines and in the stands don't realize is just how narrow the margin is between success and failure at every level of elite sports. You know, whether it's baseball, whether it's auto racing, whether it's football, a difference of one play, one inch, one tiny little tweak in your swing, and it completely unravels. And it compounds on itself and it builds. And then in baseball, you get to see the players in front of you failing. And so that, I think, is a natural human kind of snowball effect where you become pressing more and more and more, and then you run into the situation where that you have now where everybody on the team is pressing with the exception maybe of Acuna, and he's going and getting hurt. So, you know, it's just everything is going wrong. Everything is snowballing. I have to think that they're probably already starting to look forward to 2026, which is a shame because this was a team that was probably top four World Series pick coming into 2025.
Jay Busby from YahooSports.com, who has been a friend on and off the air for goodness gracious. We've been talking on the radio for like 17 years now, but we're getting old.
I know. We're old, old men. Started way back in Gulf Coast of Florida when I was a wee blogger. You were a wee radio producer. It was a long, long time ago.
I've slightly graduated. You, on the other hand, well done.
No,
well
get
done.
Out of here.
Books galore, writing everywhere. Let's talk real quick, if you don't mind, just a little SEC football, and then I want to ask you about the new book coming out, but also your book on Dale Earnhardt as well. The Georgia Bulldogs. We're going through. We've got later on this week. We're going to vote for the projected order of finish in the Southeastern Conference. I plan on putting Georgia number one on my poll. And it's interesting because they are very close to Texas in terms of the wagering odds to win the conference. But the more folks that I've talked to around here, it feels like Texas is almost a consensus pick, right? And it's all hinged on Arch Manning. My thought is, if there's one way to take out a guy, and yes, he had his year of experience last year, got some snaps, whatever, but if there's a way to impact a guy like Arch, it's do what Georgia does and just have the Philadelphia Eagles defense 4 years from now as your starting defense. Talk to me about Gunnar Stockton, about Kirby Smart and this Georgia team, because I got to tell you, like, I'm having a hard time not saying I'm taking them over Texas and I'm going to ride that to the bank.
Yeah, I mean, this again gets to the point of the margins being so narrow. You pick Georgia, no one's going to look at you strange. You pick Kentucky, you pick Mississippi State, you might get a few. But Georgia,
get your credentials revoked
appropriately. Yeah, exactly. Just yanked and kicked the hell out of here. But, yeah, I mean, the margins are so narrow. And Kirby has demonstrated over the last, what, 7, 8 years that he knows how to nurture talent, that he has backup plans upon backup plans, that Gunnar Stockton, you know, he came in late last year, had everything lined up. He's got the name. He's got the absolute perfect name, which I think counts for a lot in the SEC. And, yeah, everything is lined up for Georgia to be in position. And at this point in the SEC, that's what you want. There's no consensus favorite. You want to just be in position and be ready. And that's what Georgia is. That's what Texas is. You might be able to make the case that Alabama is there. But, yeah, it's Georgia is going to be right there in the mix, and it's going to be fun.
Jay Busby from YahooSports.com joining us here on the program. What is the outside view? We obviously cover the Gamecocks of South Carolina. The folks in Columbia, the folks in the upstate, they're pumped. You got Lenora Sellers, who has, I think, the six or seven shortest odds to win the Heisman. This guy's being talked about in South Carolina as if he's got Michael Vick potential in front of him. You were talking about Shane Beamer, who a lot of folks were arguing could have, should have, would have been last year's college football coach of the year with the turnaround they had, and obviously knocking off Clemson at the end of the year, et cetera. What's the outside perspective of what that team is or could be as a threat to a Georgia?
Threat to a Georgia, maybe not, but threat to make the CFP, absolutely. They're going to be a trendy pick. Lenora Sellers is a guy that everybody is looking at as that, as you said, that Heisman candidate. It's going to be a lot of fun to see how they've got some pieces that they need to replace, but everybody seems to have a fair degree of confidence in South Carolina, particularly on the way that they finished last year with so much momentum. And again, like I said before and again, margins are narrow here. They may not be at a Georgia-Texas level, but they are certainly – I would not be comfortable if I were in Alabama playing them, you know, with an Ole Miss playing them. I would not mark that as a W the way that they have in the past.
I think it's fair. They strike me as a team like – they're the top of the second tier, or right there in the top of that second tier. They absolutely, I mean, they competed with Alabama last year. Frankly, probably should have beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. They're at the top of that second tier, and they strike me as a team that the right game on the right day, play perfect football, they could snipe a Texas. They could. I don't know that they could consistently beat all of them, but they could get one. And 10-2 might get you into a conference title game this year.
Right.
Not saying they go in it as a favorite. But it's, like, not a ridiculous notion that they could backdoor their way into one of those, assuming a Georgia stumbles somewhere, assuming a Texas stumbles somewhere else.
Right. If you're not one of those Titans, a Georgia, Texas, you want to be in the position that South Carolina is in, where you are dangerous, where you have the ability, where you're not – there's going to be a Saturday afternoon when they're playing somebody, and you're like, oh, hey, look at that. South Carolina's up by two touchdowns. But it's not going to be the same way that it was with Vandy knocking off Alabama. You're going to have a situation where South Carolina is going to surprise some people until they don't surprise people with how well they're playing.
Jay Busby, YahooSports.com, joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. What's your SEC hot take? Everybody's got one. Everybody's been cooking one for the last 3 months. What is it?
I got to think about that. I haven't put one on the – all right.
He's better than that, people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's see. I think Auburn is going to be better than people think they are. I think that Auburn is getting it got a whole lot of grief. I think that, I mean, they put a lot of money into the transfer portal. They've all put into the NIL. They are really investing heavily in this team. I think they're going to surprise some people, and they kind of have to. I'm working on a story for later this week about coaches on the hot seat, and Hugh Freeze, despite the name, going back to the Let It Go, he is going to be very, very much on the hot seat.
Yeah, so I said there are three coaches on the hot seat coming in this year. I think Sam Pittman in Arkansas. And I don't know that he's necessarily on it right now. I just think that team might be in a world of hurt this year.
Yeah.
Mark Stoops at Kentucky, because I think this is going to be the worst roster he's had since he's been here. Lost his recruiting coordinator. It's all been downhill. I think that team could legitimately go 3-9. And even at Kentucky, that's just not going to be good enough for them. And I've said Hugh Freeze is on it. And I've got some friends of mine that are Auburn fans, some folks that cover that team. And they are not super thrilled with Hugh right now. Apparently, there's some drama about him spending more time than they'd like out on the golf course and yada, yada, yada. And I listen, some of it sounds like stories I believe. Some of it sound like stories that I'm like, hey, you just maybe want the guy. I don't know, but I do think he's in a, if not on the hot seat, in a prove it year for sure.
I would throw Billy Napier into that mix
sure.
as well. But I would say the next Auburn booster that you find that is satisfied with the team will be the first Auburn booster that you find that is satisfied with the team. So, you know, you take it with a grain of salt. I always love kind of comparing fan bases and booster bases, and Auburn is consistently the most entertaining in the SEC.
Without a doubt. All right, let's talk a little bit. You got a new book coming out.
I do.
What are we, about six and a half weeks from publishing?
Yeah. 6 weeks from tomorrow. Yeah, it's called Iron in the Blood. It is the story of the Iron Bowl, obviously, hence the name. But it's more than that. It's about how Auburn and Alabama are not just as football institutions, but as cultural institutions. I mean, so much of Southern history and Alabama history ran through these two schools, and football was kind of the center point for all of it. So I found that as a fascinating way to kind of start out. Obviously, I start out with the Kick Six and Gravedigger. But then from there, I go back into the entire history of the two programs and showing how how fascinating the history is for both of these programs. I mean, I won't spoil it. Not that anybody already knows, but it's Auburn had a chance to be in Alabama's position, and Auburn made some decisions early on in the 20th century that really sidelined the school in a way that to some degree they're still paying for today, and in a way that Alabama didn't. And it's just fascinating watching these two schools. They're each other's rivals. They're each other's hated rivals, but they need each other, and it's a constant battle between love and hate. And it was just too tremendous to pass up as a topic.
I've been around a few Auburn and Alabama fans. I don't think they'd use the L word as much as the H word in that sentence sometimes. I've loved this rivalry for a long time from a distance. Obviously, when I was down in Destin, which the panhandle of Florida is just lower Alabama, we were surrounded by it. This rivalry, I you have the Michigans and the Ohio States, you have the Army Air Forces, you have Army Navy, you have so many great college football rivalries, but especially in the Southeast, that one is so special. I've heard the argument before, oh, well, there's no other pro sports in Alabama. There's no right. NFL team. There's no MLB team. There's no NBA team, whatever, and that's the reason. And I'm sure that there is an element of that, but is it the family Civil War angle? Like, what is it about that rivalry that makes it stand out amongst college football's best?
Well, it's the fact that they are in and amongst each other. It's not like Michigan, Ohio State, where you've got a state border between them. You know, Alabama and Auburn fans live with one another, sometimes literally, sometimes in the same marriage bed, you know, when you've got these mixed marriages. But you're constantly seeing the rival, the enemy, and there's no escaping it. There's that dude at your work that goes for the other team. And so if the Iron Bowl doesn't go your way, it is a miserable, miserable year at work or at the golf course or whatever it might be. And then, you know, there is that kind of us against the world mentality. And that's what I mean about the love aspect, because, you know, these two teams definitely do not love each other, but they love the fact that they are connected in a way that few other schools are. I mean, you mentioned the rivalries of Michigan, Ohio State. There's only a handful that come anywhere close to the level of Auburn, Alabama. And that's something that the people of Alabama on both sides of the fence take great pride in.
Iron in the Blood, the story of the Iron Bowl, will be out in about 6 weeks from now. I will be there on debut day. And now that I have it took Jay Busby and I like 16 years to meet in person, and now it's been twice in a year. I'm sorry about that, but I'm glad. Jay Busby covers what don't you cover for Yahoo Sports now?
I mean, that's a good question. Pretty much anything they need me to. Hell, I'm doing the British Open later on this week, so not going to.
I was about to be real mad.
I would be. I would love to, but there's too much going on in Atlanta right now. So between that and the Beyonce concert, you know, we're hopping.
You let the folks at Yahoo know if they need somebody to go to that event. I'm happy for you. I'll do it for you, Jay.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Jay Busby writes for YahooSports.com. You can follow him on X at Jay Busby. Busby, JayBusBee, longtime friend of the show, and I am honored enough to call him a friend off of it as well. Make sure you give him a follow on X, and again, check out his new book, Iron in the Blood, How the Alabama vs. Auburn Rivalry Shaped the Soul of the South. And that is not too drama-filled, in my opinion.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks for coming by, Big Dog.
Absolutely.
Good to see you, brother. Jay Busby, we got to take a break. When we come back here in just a minute, we'll run through the rest of the SEC. We'll get set up for the conference commissioner, Greg Sankey, speaking at 9 a.m. That's all coming up on a live edition of the Rob Brown Show from SEC Media Days in Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame, presented by Ingles, here on the Fan Upstate. It is the Rob Brown Show here on the Fan Upstate. Great to have you all. Happy Monday, dudes and dudettes. We will be here all the way through Thursday at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia, for SEC Media Days. Glad to have you all along for the ride. Let's keep going with our SEC breakdown. Well, before we do that, by the way, thanks as always to the iconic Jay Busby of Yahoo Sports. Did not know that Jay was going to be here, and as soon as we saw each other, he was downstairs in the media pit. He looked up, saw me, came up, spent a few minutes. His book, Iron in the Blood, will be dropping in about 2 months from now. And I will tell you, if you have not read it before, Jay also had a book out not terribly long ago about Dale Earnhardt, and it is one of the best NASCAR books, one of the best sports books I've ever read. Jay is a hell of a writer. We were talking a little bit during the break about the research he put into this, and Jay said he spent well over 2 years putting research into this book, well over 2 years establishing everything that he needed to know to feel comfortable to write this book. So I have no doubt that this book is going to be absolutely incredible. Again, it is going to drop in about 6 months. So if you have any connection at all to the Iron Bowl rivalry between Auburn and Alabama, that is going to be a must read when it drops, pardon me, in about 2 months from right now. We got the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, scheduled to take to the podium just behind me coming up here in about, we'll call it about 15 minutes from right now, and I will play some of the audio. We'll check in and out of his press conference as Greg Sankey speaks when he gets going, but I do want to finish up some of the schools in the SEC that we have not gotten to yet. I won't spend a ton of time on some of the schools that are maybe not as much a prohibitive favorite, as the next hour of the show is going to be dedicated predominantly to Greg Sankey and reacting to his press conference, as well as getting set up for Shane Beamer and the South Carolina Gamecocks. Their day at Media Days is today, and we will work on getting some sound from that a little bit later on in the program. Let's talk about Mississippi State here for just a minute. 300-1 to win the conference. I don't really think we need to spend a ton of time on this team. Best case, I think, for this team is probably looking at around 5-7, to be honest with you. They've got Arizona State in week two. Their SEC opener is not until the end of September, September 21st, as a matter of fact, when they take on the mighty Gators of Florida. If they lose both of those games, it could be a very, very rocky road for Mississippi State. In fact, there is concern that it could be back-to-back years where Mississippi State does not win a conference game. Jeff Lebby and his team had a little fight towards the end of last year, had a single possession loss to the eventual Big 12 champion, Arizona State Sun Devils. They had Georgia on the ropes for a hot minute before they lost 41-31. But zero conference wins, and it might be more of the same this year. I think this team could end anywhere from 2-10 to 5-7. The Mizzou Tigers, again, I do not think that there are coaches. I do not think that Eli Drinkwitz is on the hot seat entering this year. His Tigers are 55-1 to win the conference this year. And one of the things that has impressed me about Eli Drinkwitz over the last couple of years is this team has entered every year with the talent gap. This team has entered every year with a noticeable talent gap between his Tigers and the rest of the teams that are finishing around the record that his Tigers are finishing with. Mizzou, maybe not the NIL resources that some of the big schools have. In fact, they do have some frontline starters that could be frontline starters at some of the top-tier schools in the SEC. The problem is they are not much deeper than that. The problem is they do not go too deep at many positions at all. They are the definition of a blue-collar program. They are the definition of a very tough, hard-nosed, gritty football team. But unfortunately, being tough and able to take one on the chin does not guarantee you that you win a lot of fights. Bo Pribula, you will remember, was the quarterback at Penn State before Drew Aller decided that he was going to return for the Nittany Lions this year. So Bo Pribula hit the transfer portal. Well, he ended up at Mizzou. He will be joined by Ahmad Hardy in the backfield, the ex-ULM star who transferred over. I think this team has the talent to go 10-2. I think this team has the talent to be a shocking team. And I think, more importantly, they have the coaching to get there. I think Eli Drinkwitz is one of the guys who could be a coach of the year candidate if they get to 10-2. I also think this team could be 5-7. This might be the most, I don't really know, like both ends of the spectrum team in the SEC. It could be 10-2. It could be 5-7 when it's all said and done. I think this team could miss. I do not think it's likely, but I think this team could theoretically miss out on a bowl game. I realistically think this team's probably 7-5, maybe 8-4. I think they're going to be somewhere in that range. I don't think they're going to be a whole lot better or worse than that, but they could be. Let's go to the Oklahoma Boomer Sooners. Brent Venables has, we have talked a number of times about it, Brent Venables might have one of the, and I know we've said this about a couple of teams, but Oklahoma's got a rough schedule. Listen to this. They open against Illinois State. They got Michigan in week two, then it's at Temple. Week four, they are against Auburn, then Kent State. But the last handful of games, Texas at South Carolina, Ole Miss at Tennessee, at Alabama, back home for Mizzou, and then back home for LSU. Brent Venables has turned a lot of heads this offseason. Brent Venables made some coordinator and coaching changes. Brent Venables made some shifts in this team that has got the folks in Norman, Oklahoma very excited. There's also the question mark, is Brent Venables the guy? Is he even able to turn over control? Is that something that he's going to be comfortable with? Is that something that he's going to allow, especially if they take a couple of lumps early in this one? They bring that Michigan game to me in a perspective. Last year, we'd feel differently about it. This Michigan team's gettable. This ain't the team that won the title a couple of years ago. This ain't the team that tried to run it back last year. This is a depleted Michigan team. This is a team that is going to be missing its head coach more than likely at that point. There are a lot of questions about this team, and I think it is fair to have a lot of questions about this football team. I also think it's fair to say that the expectations on Brent Venables this year are elevated. I think this team, who is a 24-1 betting favorite to win the SEC, I think this team's got 10-2 talent. I think this team's got 10-2 coaching if Brent Venables allows the offensive staff to work independently of him. I also think this team could be 5-7, kind of in that Mizzou range. I think this team could end up being 5-7 in Venables' fourth year at the program. He is, as of now, I do not think Brent Venables is on the hot seat. There are a lot of people here at this building that do. There's a lot of people in this building that think that Brent Venables could realistically be facing the hot seat, especially if they end up towards the 5-7, not the 8-4. Oklahoma considers itself a blue blood program. They believe that they deserve to be in the playoff spot. If they are at least in the SEC contention in the last 2 or 3 weeks from the season, it could end up being very ugly down in Norman, Oklahoma. Here's what I'd like to do, ladies and gentlemen. We got to run to a break. When we come back, Greg Sankey is expected to take to the podium sometime shortly after 9 a.m. When he does, we will go live to that. We will play some of the audio and react to it as Greg Sankey gives his State of the Conference address coming up here in just a little while from now. Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks are slated to take to the podium later on today, including Lenora Sellers, the starting quarterback this year. We will also be, later on today, sitting down for a couple of interviews with DQ Smith and Nick Barrett, and then we will play those for you tomorrow. We will cover the Gamecocks throughout the course of the day today. I hope that you will stay tuned as we roll forward. When we come back here in just a minute, we hope to hear from Greg Sankey, conference commissioner. I have seen him making his way down around the media pit, kissing babies and shaking. There's no babies here. That's a metaphor. There's no babies in the building. But doing all those things to say hello. The SEC Net folks are sitting down in their chairs to start covering this event. Ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be busy. So stick around. When we come back for the final hour of the show, we'll hear from Greg Sankey. We'll get you set up, and we will break down the South Carolina Gamecocks and more. Before we do any of that, ladies and gentlemen, if there was a commissioner of college sports radio, it would be Lonzo, and he does a sports flash now.
I don't limit myself to just that. I want to be commissioner of everything. Matt Olson has replaced Ronald Acuna Jr. in tonight's All-Star Game home run derby. Acuna was pulled from the derby as a precaution to protect him from injury after a back tightness caused him to miss one game last week. The derby kicks off at Truist Field tonight at 8 p.m. Yannick Sinner acclaimed the gentleman's final at Wimbledon, defeating Carlos Alcaraz 4-6, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4. The pair played in the finals at Roland Garros 5 weeks ago, with Alcaraz claiming victory. It was Sinner's fourth consecutive major final, but the first at the All England Club. Terry Francona coached the Reds to a 4-2 win over the Rockets yesterday, earning his 2,000th victory, becoming the 13th manager in MLB history to reach the milestone. That's pretty good. That means you've been around a lot.